Ing. I picked up the firewood and turned away. Chapter 14. The Ballad of Sam, Gary, and Tiki. I lay on my back looking up at the stars, listening to Gary and Tiki snore. Gary would adamantly deny this, saying a lady of his stature would never snore, but he was a liar and a fat mouth, and his snoring sounded like an orgy involving otters and bears. The fire was getting low, but the night was warm and the sky was clear, and so I wished for things in my secret heart, waiting for sleep to take me away. "You watch the stars a lot," Ryan said from somewhere off to my left. He was on first watch, but hadn't spoken in a while. "I guess," I said. "Why?" "They don't change," I said, even though I hadn't meant to. "Everything else around me can change, but they won't ever. And it doesn't matter where I am in the world. I can look up and see the same sky." "Everything always changes," he said quietly. "And you wake up one day and don't recognize the life you had before you went to sleep." I didn't know quite what to say to that, so I said nothing at all. Nothing happened for a few moments, but then he was up and moving from the other side of the fire, dragging his bedroll closer to me. I didn't say anything as he spread it perpendicular to me, his head near mine. He lay back down, and I tried to remember how to breathe. "I can protect you easier if I'm closer," he said. "Because I need you to protect me, obviously." I refused to look over at him and instead looked back up at the night sky. "I didn't mean to avoid you." I rolled my eyes. "So you admit to the avoiding?" "Possibly." "Were you aware of it?" "Yes." "Then you meant to do it." I could hear the scowl in his voice.
"Not specifically."
"So no specific avoidance, but a vague avoidance."
"Talking to you is impossible sometimes."
"I'm a wizard."
"You say that a lot."
"It's a fact."
"It sounds like an excuse sometimes,"
says the Knight Commander. Gary chose at that moment to snort in his sleep quite loudly, shooting a puff of green and lavender sparkles at his nose. He resumed snoring annoyingly like the princess unicorn he was. Tiggy tugged him tighter against his chest in his sleep.
"How did you meet them?"
Ryan asked.
"There are at least 30 different versions of the story."
"What?"
He shrugged. "The fire popped. An owl called out from the dark woods. People talk about you."
"Why?"
"Because you're you."
"That's succinct and frightening."
"It's a reason," he said. "Trust me on that."
"Okay, then. So?"
I sighed.
Gary tells it better. Certainly with more flair. He calls it the Ballad of Sam, Gary, and Tiki. There's singing involved. And rhyming. Possibly a choreographed dance, depending on his mood. It's really quite the production. And now that I think about it, that's probably why there are 30 different versions of the story. He tends to change things up upon repeat performances. Doesn't want to let down his fans. Gods. I love that fucking unicorn.
"I'd rather hear the Sam version,"
Ryan said, and I couldn't take it anymore. I looked over at him and found him watching me, head turned back at an almost awkward angle. The firelight danced across his face, and I thought I'd never seen anything more beautiful. My magic felt so settled in my skin that I thought that I could do anything. So I said, "Okay, okay." There was once a strange and somewhat lonely boy. There was once a strange and somewhat lonely boy. He had wished upon the stars above and found them listening because one day a man came to the slums and took him away to a castle. His parents came too, and they were amazed and awed at what life would be like for them. And he worked. The strange and somewhat lonely boy worked as hard as he could, because Morgan expected great things from him. The boy wanted nothing more than to make Morgan happy and make his parents proud. That left little time for anything else.
Between schooling and magic and lessons and proper etiquette, the boy wasn't able to make friends. True, he didn't have friends in the slums to begin with, because he was odd and mouthy and fiery, and that combination made him an outcast. But he'd hoped things would be different. There was a prince for whom he would one day serve, and while he was only a few years older, the prince had little time for the peculiarity from the slums. And the boy was okay with that. Mostly. He was 14 when the wizard Morgan of Shadows came to him with a great task. He said,
"You must go into the wilds of the Dark Woods, and within 3 days bring back something unexpected."
"Unexpected?" the boy asked with wide eyes. "Is this a test?" And the great wizard said with a smile,
"Yes, little one, it is a test, and I have great faith in you."
That made the little boy feel warm and more than a little happy, because not many people had had faith in him. His parents, yes, but who else? He had no friends to miss him in the slums, no people to mourn his departure. But here he had a man who was almost a legend telling him about faith, and the boy thought that if it were possible, he would bring the man the sun and the moon, just to show how much his words meant. It was also the first time he would be going out on his own. It showed that the wizard had trust in his apprentice. Trust that he could perform the task set before him. Was he scared? Sure. He was 14 years old. He was scrawny. His voice still tended to crack. He was confused why sometimes a handsome boy smiling meant something more than a pretty girl. But he was more than his fears. He was an apprentice. And one day, he would be the king's wizard, and people would remember his name, and they would be happy to see him, happy to be his friend. And so the boy packed a bag, hugged his parents, who were only the tiniest bit teary, especially the father, and walked out of the castle, out of the city, and into the dark woods. And promptly got lost. He didn't mean for it to happen. One minute he was marching determinedly into the dark woods, and the next, after being distracted by this and that, he was in unfamiliar territory, unsure of where to go next. He knew magic, of course, but Morgan had warned him to use it sparingly so as not to attract unwanted attention, especially if he was traveling by himself. He could protect himself, if it came down to it, which were among the first lessons Morgan had taught him, defensive spells and wards and counterattacks. But he often had trouble with the little things, like directions and staying on point. It wasn't his fault, not completely. His brain worked a little differently, and it was easier for him to become sidetracked. His mother said it was a quirk. His father said it was a talent. Morgan said it was an issue to be worked through. But none of them were there with him in the dark woods. And he was. And now he was lost, and still needed to find something unexpected. There was a large spider with a web 6 feet across. It was unexpected, sure, but it was also gross. There was a skull of a large elk, 16 points upon its head. It was unexpected, definitely, but it had died in the forest it had lived in, and the boy knew that's where it should stay. There was a flower that blossomed only when touched by human hands. It was unexpected, no doubt about it, but it smelled awful and caused the boy to sneeze. That first night, he huddled up against a tree. The canopy overhead was thick, but if he angled his head just right, he could see the stars. Now, this boy had done his fair share of wishing upon these stars. Sometimes the wishes came true. Most of the time, they did not. It never stopped him, though, because the stars were always there, no matter where he was. And so, like most nights, aside from that stretch of time when he first moved into the castle, he looked up at the sky and found the fox and the dragon and the old fish, friends that never left him. And on the outside of his vision, he saw the green of his magic. It was there, like the stars, his constant. "I wish to find the unexpected," he thought, "so that I may show Morgan that he was right to place his faith in me." He slept then, under the tree, under the stars, in the dark woods. When he opened his eyes again, the sun was barely rising, and he heard a deep, choked sob that came from deeper in the woods. Whoever it was sounded so sad and hurt that it clawed at the boy's heart, even as it made him wary. He knew there were tricksters in the forest, shapeshifters and fairies and selkies who could lure even the most hardened of men with promises of sex or love or the need for comfort until they were too close to see the flash of claws, the snarl of teeth. He was a kind boy, a loving boy, but he was not a stupid boy. He remembered words that Morgan had taught him, words that could cause rocks to float and be hurled. His was an earthy magic. His words like ri and thri and par. They were weaker words, but they would do in a pinch if he needed them. He hoped he wouldn't need them. He took light steps through the woods, avoiding the leaves that scattered the forest floor. Most knew him by his mouth, the never-ending babble that would pour out talking about anything and everything. They didn't know that this strange and somewhat lonely boy could be as silent as a shadow when called upon to do so, that he could close his mouth and narrow his mind with a razor-sharp focus. He could move with the softest of steps, like he was not there at all. The sounds of sadness grew louder, and he almost hoped it was a trap, because the sobs were filled with such pain that it caused the boy's heart to shatter. A trap meant that nothing bad had happened to whomever was crying like their soul had been torn in two. There was a clearing ahead. He moved among the trees. He heard a quiet murmur moving in tandem with the sobs. He took a breath and peered around an old tree, the bark rubbing against his hands. In the clearing sat a giant of a man, head bowed, face in hands, shoulders shaking as he cried. He had long black hair that hung around large fingers. He wore only trousers, torn and dirty. Across the long expanse of his back, scars stretched in sharp, white relief from the tanned skin. It took the boy a moment to see them for what they were. Whip marks. The giant of a man had been whipped repeatedly. Some of the scars were old. Some looked newer. He moved his hand from his face, and his chin wobbled, and he let out another sound of anguish. His dark eyes were welling and spilling over onto his already wet and reddened cheeks. He looked so young. "It's okay," another voice said. "We've got away. We won't have to go back, I promise. We'll find somewhere to go, and I'll build you a house, and we can live there, and have food and beds and good dreams, and nothing will ever hurt us again." The boy looked away from the giant and saw another wonder that took his breath away. A beautiful white horse, tall and elegant and talking. The horse was talking. It wasn't until the horse looked off into the trees that the boy saw the nub of the bone on the horse's forehead that he realized it wasn't a horse at all. It was a unicorn. "So awesome," the boy breathed, quite loudly. The unicorn immediately looked over at where the boy was hiding behind the tree. It glared, eyes flashing brightly, and only then could the boy feel its magic, reaching out for his own. It wasn't as strong as a unicorn should be, but its horn was gone, so the boy didn't expect it to be. He heard the giant of a man rumble loudly as he pulled himself to his feet, and the boy thought briefly how he couldn't be a full giant, as they were 20 feet tall, but that his mother must have been a giantess and his father a man. He had so many questions to ask, but he first needed to make sure they weren't going to rip him limb from limb. "Who's there?" the unicorn shouted. "I smash," the half-giant growled. "Tiggy will smash you," the unicorn agreed. "Very hard," the half-giant said. The boy most certainly didn't want to be smashed, but he needed them to know he wasn't a threat. A unicorn couldn't be evil because their hearts were too pure. And if it was traveling with a half-giant, then the half-giant couldn't be all bad either. And they sounded scared and sad, and all the boy wanted to do was make them smile and laugh and be happy. This strange and somewhat lonely boy knew he had found something unexpected. So he took a breath and pulled his shoulders back and held himself high as he stepped away from the tree and into the clearing. The unicorn and half-giant stared at him. The boy stuck out his chest proudly. The unicorn snorted. It came out pink. "Well," it said, "that's not quite what I expected. Who knew the forest was infested with twinks?" The boy furrowed his brow. "What's a twink?" "You'll learn one day, chicken," the unicorn said, "around the time your cherry gets popped. Now go away. We're busy." The boy gaped at him. "You can't speak to me that way. I'm a wizard." "Sure, kid, and I'm the queen of Aranya." "Smashing?" the half-giant asked. "No, Tiggy," the unicorn said. "No smashing. We don't smash little twinks. We let them grow up so they can provide a valuable service by having sex with men's." "Tiggy?" the boy said. They both looked over. "I like your name," the boy said. "And I haven't decided if I want to have sex with men or women yet. I'm only 14. I still have time to decide." "Honey bear," the unicorn said, "you are the gayest thing I've seen since I last saw my own reflection." "Oh," the boy said, "that's eye-opening." "I like your face, tiny human," Tiggy said as he took a step toward the boy. The boy looked up at him in awe. "So tall," he whispered. "Tiggy," the unicorn said in warning. "His face," Tiggy insisted as he took another step and another. The boy felt the ground shake beneath. "It's not a bad face," the unicorn said. Then he narrowed his eyes. "Who sent you here? Why are you by yourself? What do you want?" "I'm on a quest," the boy said proudly, puffing out his chest again. "I must find something unexpected and bring it back to my mentor." "Uh-huh," the unicorn said. "Fascinating. Super fun. Are you here to capture us and take us back to the Coquelinaris?" The boy scrunched up his face. "Coquela what?" "His face," Tiggy said again. His eyes were red-rimmed, but the tears had stopped falling. He stood above the boy and leaned down until they were eye-level. "Whoa," the boy said. "Your eyes are huge, dude. Like as big as my hand." "Dude," Tiggy rumbled. "Huge dude." The boy smiled widely. "Dude." And then he squawked loudly as the giant picked him up and held him against his chest before turning back to the unicorn. "I keep him," Tiggy said. "He's mine." "You can't keep him," the unicorn said. "He's a human. Do you know how much upkeep they require? They eat and poop all the time." "Not all the time," the boy said. "I feel I eat and poop the regular amount of time, maybe even a little less." "He's mine," Tiggy said again. "I call him Steve." The boy said. "Steve," the unicorn said flatly. "That's okay. He looks like a Steve, I guess." "I'm not a Steve," the boy said. "I'm a Sam." "Steve," Tiggy said. "You're Steve. My Steve. I love you, tiny Steve." Sam twisted in the half-giant's arms until he could get level with his face. He reached out and squished Tiggy's cheeks in his hand, making the half-giant pucker his lips. "Sam," the boy said slowly. "Sam." "Steve," Tiggy said. "Oh my gods," the unicorn muttered. "You can keep me if you call me Sam," the boy said. Tiggy pouted. "Aw," Sam said. "That face." "Sam," Tiggy said, and Sam grinned. Tiggy sat down and held the boy in his lap. "I keep Sam," he he told the unicorn. The unicorn leaned forward and snuffled along Sam's face and neck, and the boy laughed and laughed. The unicorn finished and stepped back. "You smell like magic," he said finally. "I'm a wizard." The unicorn waited. "Okay, not quite a wizard, an apprentice."
"To who?"
"Morgan of Shadows," Sam said proudly. The unicorn looked suitably impressed. "You're an apprentice to the king's wizard?" "Yep. What's your name? How old are you? Do you like cheese? I once ate a whole block of cheese by myself and threw up for 6 hours. The unicorn stared at him, then, "Gary." "Your name is Gary?" Sam said.
"Yes."
"Ah, that's not very unicorn-like." Gary scowled. "And what is unicorn-like?" Sam shrugged. "I don't know, like Princess Mooncloud or Ethereal Tear or Starshine." "You think a normal unicorn name is Princess Mooncloud or Ethereal Tear or Starshine?"
"Yes."
Gary looked up at Tiki. "Yes, we can keep him." Tiki held him tighter. They stayed in the clearing, and Gary and Tiki told him how they'd escaped from a traveling carnival where they'd both been held prisoner by a man named Coclinaris. He'd kept them in cages for months, charging humans to come in and gawk at them, calling them unnatural wonders of the mysterious world. One night, not long before they'd met Sam in the clearing, Coclinaris had gotten drunk and hadn't properly redone the wards and dark charms that kept them in their cages. They'd escaped and run as far as they could until their legs grew tired and they could run no more. Sam heard this story and felt a heavy weight on his heart. He reached out and touched Gary's face, running his hands gently along his snout. "Did he take your horn?" he asked quietly. Gary shuddered and shook his head. "That happened before." "You're very pretty," the boy said. "With or without it, you're very pretty." And the unicorn said, "Thank you, little twink," pressing his face against the boy's. They stayed the night in the clearing, and the boy shared his food. They slept curled around each other until there came an angry snarl from the woods. They woke instantly, and the unicorn and the half-giant began to tremble. Men stood in the clearing, 4 of them, holding ropes and chains. There was one who seemed to lead the others. He stood in front of them, eyes shrewd and calculating. He was tall and imposing, looking as if he'd been carved cruelly from a mountain. His head was shaved, and as Sam watched, he unfurled a whip in his hand.
"Those are my property, boy," the man said.
His voice was like gravel, and it grated on the boy's ears. The boy shook his head. "They're no one's property. You can't own what belongs to the world." Coclinaris, for there was no doubt in the boy's mind who he was, said,
"Is that so? And who are you to stand in my way?"
"Sam," the boy said, "and these are my friends."
"Monsters don't have friends," Coclinaris said. "They exist to make me money and nothing more. Step aside and let the adults handle this."
"I am the apprentice to the king's wizard," Sam said, standing tall.
"You answer to the crown, and I am an extension of that crown."
The men laughed.
Coclinaris said, "Boy, I don't give 2 shits who you are. Step aside before I kill you."
He cracked the whip, and Tiki whined quietly in fear. Sam had had enough. There was an anger in him then, that the hearts of men could be so dark that they could not see the beauty of the creatures before them. This Sam was not the same Sam who turned the boys to stone in the alley years before. This Sam was practiced. This Sam was controlled. This Sam had friends, finally had friends that he would do anything to protect. This Sam said, "Leave. I'll give you 1 chance. Coclinaris raised his whip, and Sam raised his hands. Words came to him, words he'd never used before, like grey and san, and his fingers moved and twitched as the whip came down. Before the leather could crack against his skin, the green of the forest filled Sam's eyes, and instead of pain, Sam felt the flutter of wings. He opened his eyes and saw the whip had turned into dozens of butterflies. They fluttered in the moonlight, swirling around Sam and Cook Linares. Tiggy and Gary gasped behind him, and the men behind Cook Linares took a step back. Cook Linares grew angry. He raised his hand back to slap the boy, but the boy said, "I could kill you." And Cook Linares hesitated. "I really could," the boy said pleasantly. "I could kill you with the smallest of thoughts." Cook Linares slapped him. The boy's head rocked back. Tiggy roared. Gary growled. And Sam, who was not the boy in the alley anymore, said, "You shouldn't have done that," while raising his hands again. The men in the clearing ran. Cook Linares said, "You don't scare me." "I do," Sam said. "You're sweating." "I smash," Tiggy said in a low voice. "I smash so good." And the carnival man's eyes widened in fear, and he too left the clearing. He looked back only once, but then he was gone. They waited until the fleeing men could no longer be heard before they each let out the breaths they'd been holding. "You okay?" Sam asked his friends. And Tiggy picked him up again and held him close. He said, "Tiny Sam." They left when morning came. As they reached the gates to the City of Locks, people began to stare. They whispered about the boy from the slums who came back to the city from a wizard's quest with a half-giant and a hornless unicorn. Morgan waited for him at the castle gates with his mother and father. The king was there too, and he had a small smile on his face as he watched them approach. The prince was not there, but Sam didn't think too much on that. Morgan said, "And what have you brought me?" "Something unexpected," Sam said proudly.
"You return from the wilds with a half-giant and a unicorn," Morgan said. "That is very unexpected."
But the boy shook his head. "That's not the unexpected part." Morgan, in his infinite wisdom, said,
"Oh?"
"I went into the wilds alone, and I returned with friends," Sam said. "I've never had a friend on my own before. And now I have two, unexpectedly." And the great wizard looked away and took a stuttering breath. When he looked back at the boy, his eyes were bright, and he said,
"I think the most unexpected thing of all is you, little one. Because no one could ever hope to fathom the wilds of your heart. You were sent out on a quest and returned with more than I could have ever believed. I will give you your name now, because you've earned it."
And so the boy smiled so wide that it felt like his face would split. His parents cried, though his father would never admit to it. Even the king wiped away a tear, and Sam would make fun of him for years because of it. But he looked up at his mentor and said, "Yes, please, and thank you." Morgan of Shadows smiled and said that until the day of the trials, when he would become a full-fledged wizard, Sam Haversford, the strange and somewhat lonely boy from the slums, would be known as Sam of Wilds. Gary said, "This has been the weirdest 24 hours ever." The fire was almost out by the time I'd finished. My voice fell away, and I looked over at my friends, still snoring and curled against each other.
"You love them," Ryan said,
the first time he'd spoken since I started the story.
"Very much," I agreed.
"I wouldn't be who I am without them. We might fight with each other and piss each other off, but I would die for them, and they would die for me."
"I don't want you to die at all,"
Ryan said quietly. I looked over at him. He was staring up at the stars. "No one is dying," I said.
"Sam?"
"What?"
I waited.
"I knew you,"
he said in a rush,
"from before."
I sat up quickly.
"You did? How?"
He pushed himself up too, chewing on the inside of his cheek like he was nervous about something. He shook his head, steeling himself for something, and then did the most ridiculous thing. He covered his chest with his hands and said, "Please don't make my nipples explode." I said, "What?" He blushed and dropped his hands. He looked away again, then back at me, eyes searching for something. "You ever been turned to stone, Sam? It's an interesting experience, to say the least." "No fucking way," I breathed. "Knox? You're Knox?" He shrugged. "In the flesh. Go by Ryan now, in case you didn't notice." "But you are such a dick," I said, my voice going high. "What in the name of fuck?" "I was a dick," he corrected me. "Things change." No. Sometimes you're still a dick." He scowled at me. "Thanks." "How the hell did I not know this?" I asked. I was pretty sure my world felt completely altered. "I grew up," he said. "Worked out, gained muscle, joined the King's Army, got recruited into the Knights, came to the castle after that." "And you didn't think to tell me?" I asked. "At any point?" He looked a little hurt. "Would you have even given me a chance if you'd known?" "A chance for what?" And that seemed to fluster him. "For just... oh my gods. Sam, I don't... friendship, okay? Like... or whatever." "Or whatever," I echoed. "So instead of telling me that you were the guy that stole Mrs. Kirkpatrick's cloth, you decided to be dashing and immaculate." "Maybe?" he said with a wince. I just stared at him. Too many things running through my head. So many things I wanted to say to him. So, of course, I said the thing that mattered the least. "Why did you steal her cloth?" He rolled his eyes. "I was a teenage asshole from the slums. I stole everything. And it hit me. Why my magic had manifested then. Why I'd been able to turn them to stone when I did. Why I'd done magic so complex without ever having done it before. Ryan had been there from the very first. He was my cornerstone, even then. He was the reason I was able to do what I did." "Holy fucking shit," I whispered. "What?" he asked. "I don't..." I shook my head. "I'm just surprised. Of all the things you could have said, that's probably the thing I expected the least." "Yeah, I figured as much. I don't think I've ever seen your eyebrows go that high before." "It was very shocking," I assured him. "The most shocking of all. Why now?" "Why tell you now?" I nodded. He looked down at his hands. "I don't know. You were telling me about Tiggy and Gary, and it was personal and sweet. And I just couldn't take the thought anymore of you not knowing who I was. You said you didn't have friends before. And there were times when we were kids that I wanted you to be my friend, but I didn't know how to ask." "So you were a jerk instead," I said. "Makes sense." "Teenagers usually do," he said. And then he blurted, "I did it because of you." He winced. "Ah, shit." "Did what?" He groaned. "Gods, forget I said that, okay?" "Yeah, because when have I ever done that? Remember who you're talking to here." "Sam." "Knox." "I'm never going to hear the end of this, am I?" "Not ever," I agreed. "You have decades of this to look forward to. It probably would have been in your best interest to not have said anything at all. I will lord this over you until my dying breath, and at no point will I feel badly at doing so." For some reason, he didn't look too upset at the prospect. In fact, his mouth curved gently upward. "Everyone talked about you, even before the alleyway happened. Little Sam, they said. Little Sam, who is going to do great things. They talked about you like you were the sight to behold. And when I saw you for the first time, I thought there had been a mistake. I thought that this kid, this tiny little kid, whose mouth never closed, couldn't possibly be who they meant. He reached and stoked the fire with a stick I'd used before. The tip blackened and charred. The flame flared briefly, little sparks rising with the smoke. But then, one day, you knocked me down and took a bag of cloth from my hand. Do you remember what you said to me? I shook my head. I remember you glaring at me, thinking I was going to die a painful death. That's about it. He chuckled. You looked down at me and said, "Don't be a jerk, dude. You don't have the right to take away something that makes other people happy." And then you grinned at me and started running. I winced. Yeah, that sounds like something I would have said. It's easier to be unabashedly sanctimonious when you're 11 years old. The cynicism hadn't quite set in. Ryan glanced over at me, then back at the fire. I don't know. You're still smug a lot of the time. Ass. I am the definition of humble. But enough about me. Surely you started chasing after me because you wanted to tell me just how right I was and apologize for everything you'd ever done. Be absolved of your sins and lead a righteous life. No, Ryan said. I wanted to kick the shit out of you. I couldn't stop the bark of laughter that came out at that. That's... I don't know what that is. He shrugged. The truth. You made me mad. I tend to do that. You turned the corner down the alley, and I knew you were caught. I saw the wall and thought I was fucked. That's because you were, he said. And yet you still turned and faced us. You looked me in the eyes, and then the next thing I knew, the alley was filled with people, and your mom and dad and Morgan were threatening me, and I was positive that Morgan was going to make my nipples explode. Still one of my better rumors. I grinned up at him. People still think he can do that. I would say I'm sorry for turning you to stone, but honestly, I'm really not. He smiled again. I thought I saw a flash of teeth. Didn't think you would be. In fact, I should probably thank you. For? If you hadn't chased me that day, I'd have never turned you to stone, and Morgan wouldn't have found me. If you think about it, you're sort of responsible for everything that happened afterward. That's one way of looking at it. I beamed at him. Thanks for being a teenage dickbag, Ryan. Exactly what I was aiming for, he said. Dry as dust. Then you succeeded admirably. I laid my head back down on my pack and looked back up at the stars. What happened then? He was quiet for a moment. Then you left. To the castle. Yeah. It was all anyone could talk about. Little Sam and his magic. Little Sam would be a wizard. Little Sam ascended from the slums into Castle Lock. It was said without a hint of bitterness. In fact, if I had to put a name to the tone in his voice, I would have thought it was something like pride. Before then, you'd never done anything like that? No, I said. Not once. Morgan thought it might have been a combination of being close to puberty and a survival instinct. It manifested itself then because I needed it to. You know, because you were an asshole. You're welcome, he said. I narrowed my eyes. Why are you so dashing and immaculate now? I demanded. People like Knox don't grow up to be people like you. You should be overweight and balding and have no teeth and awful body odor to go with your surly attitude. But no, you're all muscular and gorgeous and sassy and awesome, and holy fucking shit, I'm not talking right now. Because what the fuck was I thinking? Why could I never keep my mouth shut? And his smile was blinding. Oh, crap, that's not what I meant to say at all. Oh, look over there. There's a tree that looks like a dragon. That's surely a sign. Right. A sign that you need a distraction and have failed miserably at finding one. Says you. It was a perfect distraction. We're talking about it, aren't we? Uh-huh. Muscular and gorgeous, you say? From a purely clinical standpoint, I assured him. Absolutely nothing more. Absolutely nothing more. I despised when he repeated my own words back to me and made them sound absolutely ridiculous. At least some things don't change. You were a bastard then and you're a bastard now. Sometimes. Sometimes, he said, the grin never wavering. Is that right? I scowled at him. I take it back, all of the time. You really don't know, do you? Know what? The effect you have on people? That was odd. I'd never really thought about it, to be honest. I didn't go through life wanting to affect other people. I wanted to learn magic and become a wizard. I wanted Morgan to be proud of me and confident in my abilities. I wanted my mom to smile every day and my dad to be able to put his feet up at the end of the day and not worry about what tomorrow would bring. I wanted Gary and Tiggy to never again know the sting of a whip or the confines of a cage. I wanted Ryan. I wanted Ryan to be happy and alive and to smile all the time. I wanted more, but since that couldn't happen, I would take what I could get. The king said you didn't smile, I blurted out. Ryan looked startled. What? At your ceremony, he said he never sees you smile anymore. And I thought that was weird because I see you smile all the time. Do you? Well, yeah, like right now. You have no... I cocked my head at him. What? He sighed. After you were taken to the castle, people began to realize the lives they were given in the slums were not always the lives they had to take. They thought if one of their own could grow to be someone so important, that they could change the shape of their destinies too. You inspired them, Sam. I didn't know that, I said honestly. Not really. I go back to the slums every chance I get. It's not as much as I used to, but I still try. I know. And that's what makes it all the more important, your actions. And that's why I taught myself to read. It's why I taught myself to write. It's why I changed my name. It's why I joined up with the king's army. It's why I kept my head down and worked until my back ached and my fingers bled. It's why I was recruited into the knights. It's why I was promoted to knight commander. I shook my head. No, that was you. That was only you. I didn't, but it was because of you that I did it. He looked down at his hands. Not directly, but it might as well have been. I thought that if you could change your future to make it into something more, then maybe I could too. That I could do enough to take my mom out of the slums and give her the life she deserved after putting up with a son like me. He took a breath and let it out slowly. I made it, Sam. Mostly. I changed my future. But she died before I could change hers. I made a promise to her, before, that I would do everything in my power to become greater than what I was born into, be more than what my station allowed. And I needed... need to keep that promise to her. I felt cold. I'm sorry, I said, inadequate as it was. I didn't know. And there were questions that I needed to ask. How, when, where, why? But they all stuck in my throat, and I said nothing more. I'd never known the loss of a parent. I couldn't even begin to understand. Most don't, he murmured. They don't know me as Knox. They only know Ryan Foxhart. I reached over and took his hand in mine, letting it rest in his lap. Our fingers intertwined, and he stared down at them. I didn't like it when he hurt, even if my act of comfort hurt me more. I know you, I said quietly. I know how you were and how you are now. I hesitated, but pushed through it. Do the others know? About where you came from? Meaning, did Justin know? And I thought I knew the answer, but I still needed to hear it from him, no matter how crushing it would be. He shook his head. I sighed and withdrew my hand. I was disappointed, though I didn't know if it was my place to be. It was none of my business what he told people about himself. I needed to remember that. Just because I was proud of where I'd come from didn't mean that others would feel the same. The slums were awful, sure, but they'd been my home for the first half of my life, and I knew happiness there. I didn't see the need to hide where I'd come from because others might look down upon it. Granted, most already knew I was from the slums. But, if anything, that just made the hurt a bit worse. That Ryan could see how most didn't give a shit about me, yet he still chose to hide it about himself. And maybe for the briefest of moments, I entertained a dark thought. Just how easy would it be to let it slip to Justin that his fiancée was born in the slums? Would Justin still be as keen to marry Ryan? It would be so easy. Then Ryan would be free and I could... No. No. That's not who I was. That's not who I am. I could never do that to him, no matter how I felt about him. It wasn't my secret to tell. It's not like that, he said, and he almost sounded like he was pleading. I'm not ashamed about being from the slums. It's just, I can't. I didn't say you were, I said, trying to put him out of his misery. You have to do what you have to do, you know. You don't need to justify yourself, especially to me. I'm proud of how far you've come, and flattered that you think I helped in whatever way I did, though I don't think I deserve that. I promise your secret is safe with me. It's not meant to be a secret, he said. You have to believe me about that. I do, I said, even though it felt like a lie. Can we just... It's late, I said, because I could see this brewing into something more damning. I should get some sleep. You good for the first watch still? He nodded. He opened his mouth to say something else, but closed it a moment later. Maybe he understood that it was time we stopped before we couldn't stop anymore. Give me a couple of hours and I'll take over, I told him. He looked away. I turned over on my side away from him and tried to take calm, even breaths. To shut my mind down so I could at least sleep for a little while. Of course, it wasn't that easy. It never had been, and all I could think of now was Ryan, 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 and Knox, Knox, Knox. About how I could be so stupid to think I could get to know him better without there being consequences. Without allowing him to get even further under my skin. That was proving to be difficult. After what felt like ages, he said, Sam? I thought about ignoring him, feigning sleep. Instead, I said, Yeah? My voice was rough. What happened to him? Who? Coakland Harris. I smiled, though he couldn't see it. Most never thought to ask that question, so of course he did. The day after I brought Tiggy and Gary to the castle, he was arrested and charged with abuse and cruelty to magical creatures. They're protected, you know. As long as they haven't hurt anyone else, they're protected by law. His entire carnival was dismantled, and he's in a jail in the desert. He'll be there for a very long time. Because of you, he said. I couldn't let him get away with what he did. It wasn't fair, and I wouldn't allow that to happen to anyone else. I thought to stop there, but truth for a truth, right? That's how the game is played. I almost killed him in that clearing. It was very close. I sent him to jail so I would never have to. If he's lucky, that's where he'll stay. Because if I ever see him again, he won't be walking away. He said, Sam... Like I had achieved something wonderful. Like I had revealed to him a great secret that only he and I would ever know. And I suppose I did. So I slept and dreamed of running through the streets of the slums, my heart beating rapidly, my lungs burning. And I laughed because even though I was chased into a blind alley, my cornerstone was there and he'd never let anything hurt me. Because only he could do that. And there... In a world that did not exist, he never would. Ryan woke me a couple of hours before dawn. He crawled under his blanket as I sat up. His head was near my knee, just inches away, really. He looked up at me, I looked down at him. Eventually, he closed his eyes. I wondered at this complex man, this knight from the slums who wanted nothing more than to become something more. I thought it possible that he looked up at the stars and had wished for the same things I did. How funny that our paths crossed as they had, then and now, and how every time was not the right time, no matter how much I could wish it to be so. And I told myself, we needed to find Justin soon, because I couldn't have him like this. I couldn't have him within reach. Not when I would just have to let him go once we got the prince back. He was in love. And I was not the type of man to ever try and come between something like that. We would get Justin back, and they would go back to Castle Lox, and I would go north. There would be a wedding, and I'd send my condolences at missing the ceremony, and my congratulations at such a joyous union. I would learn what I needed to learn under Randall. I would come back to the city of Lox under control, and everything would be fine. Everything would be wonderful. Ryan would be happy, and I would be happy for him. The silly crush I'd foster would be nothing more than a distant memory. And one day, I'd find another person meant to be my cornerstone, and any time I passed Ryan in the halls or stood near him in the throne room, I'd smile and he'd smile back. We'd think fleetingly on this little adventure we'd had back in the early days. And then we'd move on. Because that is the only thing we could do. Still, I had to stop myself from running my fingers through his hair. I knew now why Morrigan had said he feared for my heart. I did too.
Chapter 15. Mamas. The city of Lox was the capital of Rania. The king resided in the Castle Lox. For the most part, it was beautiful. The ports were far enough away that the air was clear and fresh. The roads, especially around the castle, were well maintained and landscaped. It was often said that the only blight upon the city of Lox was the slums, that area that stretched along the eastern edge of the city. But for the most part, the city of Lox was bright and vibrant, a beacon of surety and the Varanian dream. Meridian City was the exact opposite. It was dirt and grime, sex and debauchery. Not one single person in Meridian City could cast a stone because all were bathed in sin. These were the thieves and the murderers. These were the liars and the cheats. These were the ones who slunk in the dark, just as likely to steal your wallet as to stab you in the kidneys. If you needed to hide from the law, you went to Meridian City. If you wanted to drink and get high and sleep with strangers, usually in the same place, you went to Meridian City. The air stank of smoke. There was garbage in the streets. People wandered drunkenly, laughing and screaming. Men fucked whores in alleyways. Women fucked whores in doorways. Madams and pimps prowled the corners, making sure their girls and boys presented themselves as they walked the streets. It was everything the city of Lox was not. And I loved it. It was rage and base desires. It was anger and sadness and despair and desperation. But it was honest. It beat with a corrupted, diseased heart. But it wore it on its sleeve and made no excuses for what it was. Meridian City was wrong. And it knew it. And there was a time I could have gotten away with entering the city without having to hide my face. But the older I'd gotten, the more my name had spread and the more recognizable I'd gotten. I didn't mind, not really, but with the events of the last few weeks, and especially with Ryan at my side, it was going to make it difficult to go see who we needed to see before we went to Old Clearing. I needed information, and there was only one person in Meridian City I could get it from. You two need to stay out of the city, I told Gary and Tiki the afternoon we arrived to the outskirts of the city. I could hear groups of travelers on the old road through the trees of the dark woods. It'll be too difficult for all of us to get in without getting recognized. I don't think it's going to take that long.
But I want to see Mama,
Tiggy rumbled. I know, I said, but this isn't that kind of visit. We can't stay, and you two aren't exactly inconspicuous.
I resent that remark, Gary said. I am as inconspicuous as they come.
Me too,
Tiggy said.
Says the hornless gay unicorn and half-giant. You draw too much attention. because you're so amazing. They both preened like I knew they would. Who's Mama? Ryan asked. You didn't tell him? Gary demanded. He's going to meet Mama for the first time, and I won't get to be there to watch? I don't even need to tell you how unfair that is. I rolled my eyes. And yet, you're telling me anyway. This is going to be something I'm not going to like, isn't it? Ryan said. I feel like this has happened a lot on this trip already. Adventure, I corrected him. Not a trip, adventure. Trips imply vacation. Adventure implies awesomeness. And no, I haven't told him about Mama. It hasn't exactly come up yet. But, Gary whined, it's going to be hysterical and disturbing and wonderful, and you're going to make me miss it. What have I ever done to you? Name one thing. Wait, don't answer that. I just thought of 40 things. At least, I said. So are you going to tell me who Mama is? Ryan asked as I handed him a hooded robe from the pack Gary carried. I pulled out a similar one, muted and gray, and tied it over my shoulders, pulling the hood up and over my face. She runs the Tilted Cross, among other things, Gary said with barely contained glee. The only gay brothel and tavern in Meridian City. And she is Sam's fairy drag mother. Meridian City was run by a council with an elected figurehead to make the pretty speeches and faulty promises. They touted reform, plans to clean up the streets to make the city more hospitable, less of a sinkhole. The problem was if you lived or visited Meridian City on a regular basis, chances were you didn't give two shits about making the world a better place. So the old people were voted out and the new people were voted in, all saying the same things over and over again. It was a circle, and one that had sustained itself for decades. But everyone knew the real truth. If you needed weapons, you went to Fang, a barrel of a man with half his teeth. If you needed drugs, you went to Letnia, a beautiful older woman with an eye patch and a taste for cigars. And if you wanted anything else, you went to Mama. And I needed information. I pulled my hood tighter around my face as we pushed through the crowds. I thought I saw an orgy going on through an open doorway. A woman on a corner told me she was born with 6 fingers, and that made hand jobs that much more intense. A man tried to sell me rotted fish. A girl not that much younger than me told me with glazed eyes that she dreamed of me the night before. A boy who had to be just into his teens asked if I wanted a blowjob. I'm cheap, he said with a bit of pride. I pulled Ryan on. His eyes were wide, darting all around. His face was flushed, and he looked horrified and aroused all at the same time. It was a good look on him. You never been here before? I asked, seeing the sign for the Tilted Cross in the distance. Figured you army boy spent your leave here. He shook his head. Most did. I never saw the point. I don't need anything that's offered here. I laughed darkly. Now that certainly can't be true. You can get anything here. That's so, Sam. Is that what you do? His voice was harsh, almost as if he was judging me. I flashed him a smile that didn't quite reach my eyes. You need to listen to me, okay? When we get there, you let me do the talking. You don't speak to Mama until she speaks to you. You don't ask her questions. You don't threaten her or try to intimidate her. You don't even look at her funny. She can and will destroy you, and I won't be able to do anything to stop her. You sound scared of her, he said. I shook my head. Oh, no. I'm not scared of her. Never have been. I've never given her reason to make me fear her. But that doesn't mean I don't respect her. She doesn't peddle children. She doesn't allow the harder drugs at her businesses. And she takes care of her boys and girls. They are there because they want to be, not because she forces them. They aren't walking the streets. They're courtesans, and they're free to come and go as they please. As long as they follow her rules, she keeps them safe. A whore is still a whore, no matter how you dress him up, Ryan said. Let's keep that opinion to ourselves, I said. You'll thank me later. You should have let me bring my sword. I can't protect you if no weapons, I said. I was clear on that, and I don't need you to protect me. I have my magic, and if something happens, then I'll be the one protecting you. To that, he had no retort. As I pulled him through the crowd, I felt the heat of his skin under my fingers. This place drove me nuts. It made my skin itch. We reached the main doors to the Tilted Cross. A large man stood there that I'd never seen before. I hadn't been here in months, so I wasn't surprised that there was new staff. He was huge, bigger than Ryan even, and he held his arms across his chest in such a way that told anyone and everyone to fuck off. So I grinned at him. I have business here. He glared down at me.
That's so. Are you looking to get fucked?
Probably not today, I said, and Ryan made a choking noise behind me. I need to see Mama.
Is that so?
Yes, so can you let me in?
Bounce, baby boy. Unless you're a paying customer, get the fuck out of my sight. Mama don't have time for you.
I chuckled. I'm not leaving. You're going to let me in.
Am I? Or am I going to break your face?
You must be new here, I said, and that pissed him off. Sam, Ryan hissed. Don't make that extremely large man angry. He grabbed at and bunched up my robe, and I knew he was getting ready to pull me back and insert himself between the two of us. It was almost sweet.
A little too late for that,
the doorman said, pushing himself off the wall. He rocked his neck side to side, cracking the joints. His hands were the size of my face. They would probably hurt. Fists that big usually do. I reached into the pocket of my trousers and pulled out a small, flat disc. It was carved from black stone and inlaid with lines of gold. It was heavy, and there was no mistaking what it was. I held my palm open so the doorman could see it. He started to a stop, and his eyes went wide. He looked flustered, and I almost felt like a bit of an ass for antagonizing him as I had. Almost.
Forgive me, he said. You go right in, sir. She's in her office. Moisha will show you up.
Thank you, I said. You do a good job. I was actually a little bit intimidated. He opened the door and smiled shyly at me. I'll admit I melted a little. Oh my gods, you're adorable, and... Ryan pulled me in through the door, his grip tight on my arm. The door closed behind us. The long, windowless hallway dark in front of us. Mama said it was for ambiance. I chose to believe her. What the hell was that? Ryan demanded. I showed him the disc. Mama's medallion. Very rare. I think only 3 or 4 people have one. It means I can come and go whenever I please.
You can come and go to a whorehouse whenever you please, he said flatly.
I waggled my eyebrows at him. Well, maybe not that kind of coming and going. He groaned.
I walked right into that one.
With no hesitation, I agreed. But no, I'm not one to partake in the services offered. Mama and I have an understanding.
And what would that be?
I shrugged. She met me when I was 17. She wanted me to come work for her when I was 18. I told her I wanted to wait to have sex until I was with someone I loved. She told me that was foolish. I told her she was an old jaded cow for thinking so. Then we laughed and got drunk, and she made me meatloaf, and I brought her wigs, and now I have her medallion. He stared at me. What? It's the truth.
I know, he said. I no longer question the things that happened to you. It makes everything easier.
I grinned at him. That's the best way to go through life. Believing everything I say and not questioning it at all. If Gary tells you otherwise, it's because he's jealous and a liar, so ignore him.
So you're a virgin, then?
What?
You said you're not having sex until you're in love. You're a virgin.
Who says I haven't been in love? My voice is level, almost cool, but the back of my neck felt sweaty, and I really didn't want to be having this conversation with him.
He frowned. Have you?
Let's pretend this conversation isn't happening, I said quickly. That would be awesome. His frown deepened. I went to put the medallion back in my pocket, only to see he was still holding onto my arm, and didn't seem inclined to let it go. I rolled my eyes at him, and led us from the hallway into the Tilted Cross. The tavern itself had another entrance on the west end of the building, and the thunder of voices and music bled through closed doors to our left. Even though it was the middle of the day and the middle of the week. Directly in front of us was a grand staircase with a gaudy chandelier hanging over it, the crystals hanging from it large and uncut.
The carpet was red, and the staircase a deep, darkened hardwood from the middle of the dark woods. Couches lined the walls. There were doors on either side of the branching hallways. Some were closed, others were empty, revealing rooms with made-up beds and vanities. These rooms were the vanilla rooms, I knew. You had to go down to the basement if you wanted flogs and plugs. Mama made sure I stayed out of the basement, given my propensity for wanting to see and feel everything. She told me she didn't want me to be corrupted so quickly. I told her I was just fine with corruption. Then she showed me a thin wooden device that was meant to be inserted into a penis, and I advised her that I was in complete agreement to avoid any and all corruption for as long as humanly possible. She had just laughed and laughed and laughed. And all the boys, and the men, they prowled around, some in suits, some in absolutely nothing at all. They were young and old, skinny and fat and cut, and everything in between, because Mama knew the tastes were varied. Some wanted a hairy daddy, others wanted a smooth boy. Still others wanted both at the same time.
"I give people happiness," she told me, "even if it's just for an hour. Because there is happiness in release."
And they watched us with interested eyes, calculating, planning, wondering who we'd come here for, who we'd pick. If we were a couple that needed a third, or if we'd go into separate rooms. Moisha stood at the front desk. He was a tall, wispy man with almost colorless skin. He was achingly beautiful, his yellow hair falling down around his shoulders. I was convinced that he wasn't completely human, that he had to have some elf in there somewhere, but neither he nor Mama would ever say. "Sam," he said, his voice light and musical. I should have known the hood wouldn't fool him. "How wonderful it is to see you again. Have you returned to take me up on my offer?" Yeah, Moisha wanted to fuck me. He'd made that much clear repeatedly. He wouldn't even charge me, though he really didn't do that anymore. Only on special occasions for the most esteemed clients. But for me, he just wanted to taste my skin. I pulled back my hood and Ryan did the same. I saw eyes go wide around us and the whisper started. They knew who we were. Some might not have known why we were here, but that didn't matter. Moisha's eyes flickered over to Ryan with faint disinterest before turning back to me. They were the brightest green I'd ever seen on a person. Almost shockingly so. "Moisha," I said in greeting, "you're looking lovely as always." He cocked his head at me, lips in a thin line, bloodless and almost clear. "Flattery gets you everywhere with me, Sam of Wilds. You know that. I have a room set aside. Should I have it opened up? I suppose I could entertain the idea of a third, if you insist." He glanced back at Ryan again, and then back to me. "But I'd really rather it be you alone. Did you know that magic has a taste? Like lightning, like burning. I'm sure I could find that tang on your skin." Ryan's grip on my arm tightened exponentially. I tried to tug it loose, but his fingers bit into my skin. Moisha, of course, missed none of it. "Does the Knight Commander need a boy?" he asked. "I understand how frustrating it must be, being betrothed to a prince. Personal experience, you could say." His eyes went back to me. "Never able to just take what it is you want."
"Nobody is taking anything," Ryan growled.
And if that didn't make my heart stutter, I don't know what did. Too bad it was misplaced. I was no more in danger here than I would be back home in the castle. Moisha would never hurt me. And even if he wanted to, Mama wouldn't allow it. Ryan just didn't know how these things worked. I said, "You know how it is for me, Moisha." His lips curled. "Yes, love. What a petty emotion." "But lust isn't." He showed his teeth. "Lust is in us all. You don't need love to have it." Old games, this. I had a fleeting thought of introducing him to Dimitri. That was a scary thought. "I need to see Mama." He was looking back at Ryan, annoyance splayed clearly on his face. "She's busy." "Moisha?" "Your little prince was taken by a dragon," he said to Ryan. "Pity. He was quite exquisite. There was a certain taciturnity about him that I couldn't help but admire." Then his voice changed, just the slightest bit, from cold to frost. "You shall let go of Sam now, before there's a problem." "Moisha?" They both ignored me.
You already have a problem.
Ryan said hotly.
You're not gonna touch him.
Moisha smiled.
Maybe not today.
But soon. I wasn't kidding when I said magic had a taste. I want his storm on my tongue. Oh, for fuck's sake, I said.
Sam, we're leaving, Ryan said, trying to pull me back toward the door.
Knock it off, I snapped at him, jerking my arm away. This isn't anything I'm not used to. If something is pissing you off, then go wait outside. He flinched as I turned back to Moisha. And you? Take us up to Mama or I'll go myself. I don't have time for your shit today, Moisha. Either move or get the fuck out of my way. He watched me with those cool eyes. His lips twitched once, like he thought I was precious, and he nodded.
But of course, Sam. I'm sure Mama's no longer busy now. You're different than you were before. Harder.
His gaze crawled down my body, then back up.
In so many, many different ways.
And then he turned toward the staircase and walked away. Fucking Moisha, I muttered, knowing he could hear me. I looked back at Ryan. You coming? He scowled at me.
I'm not leaving you alone in here.
For the love of... Look, just remember what I said about Mama. You can't lash out, Ryan. It's not how things are done here. She will just as soon kill you as look at you.
I wonder sometimes about the company you keep, he said.
I looked at him and wondered that too. Maybe I was a masochist. That certainly would explain a lot. I have my reasons. Do we have an understanding? He grumbled something under his breath that I couldn't quite understand. I chose to believe it was enthusiastic consent for everything I told him. It would have to be good enough. I was in Mama's good graces, but that would only get me so far. I felt the eyes of the boys and men track us as we walked across the room toward the staircase. The air smelled of flowers and sweat and sex. It was a heady scent, pungent enough to get slightly drunk off of it if you breathed it in too much. Mama said it was all that pheromones that the flowers and humans released. I thought it was more than that. That she'd had the drug lord Letnia engineer a concoction that circulated the room via the ceiling fans that spun lazily above, lowering inhibitions, raising the heat. She smiled her enigmatic Mama smile when I told her as much, calling me a silly boy, planting a sticky kiss on my cheek. Ryan crowded me closely from behind, and for all my annoyance at his intimations that I couldn't handle myself, that I was a young, foolish boy with no experience to how the world worked, I found his insistence at protecting me from perceived threats oddly endearing. Part of me wanted to snap my teeth at him, to remind him that I'd survived 20 years without him, that I could handle myself, and I thought he knew that. I thought he knew I was more capable of dealing with any threats against my person, but for some reason, he still felt the need to attempt to defend me from the big, wide world. It would be comforting if I allowed it, but I couldn't. I wasn't supposed to feel safe with him. Not like that. We followed Moisha up the stairs, all eyes in the room on us as we ascended. I ignored them. Ryan growled at them. Whatever. We were led down a long hallway, and the sounds of sex and fucking echoed around us behind closed doors. Someone asked if Daddy liked that. Another begged in a broken voice. Still another just groaned. I had learned to disregard the sounds of the brothel, but Ryan's eyes were wide, and he reached out and grabbed my arm again. Fingers biting into my skin. I thought to pull myself away again, but didn't. A large, ornate door stood at the end of the hallway. Mama was burned into the wood, surrounded by carved leaves and trees made to look like dicks. She loved nature and cock, she told me once, so why not combine the two? I had had no argument to the contrary over such a thing. I rarely did with Mama. Moisha knocked twice, waited a beat, then opened the door. The office was circular, the walls covered in paintings of her favorite courtesans, all in various risque positions, some more obscene than others. There was a large bookshelf on one side filled with everything from ancient philosophy to hardcore porn. Mama was brilliant and ruthless,